Welcome to the program for Tuesday, December 21st, 2010, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today is Pentagon Solutions, as we do the first Tuesday and third Tuesday of every month, and I'm pleased to focus today on the Quadrennial Defense Review Independent Panel, and two of the members of that panel joining me for the program today. One of the co-chairs is Stephen Hadley, former National Security Advisor, will join me in hour number two of the program. First off, I'm pleased to welcome to the studio John Nagle, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Center for a New American Security. It's great to see you, John. Thank you for coming in today.
Great to be here, Francis.
As we were talking about before we went on the air, I'm looking over the list, and I'll post a link to the report at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. I can't imagine what the meetings must have been like to noodle through all of the things that you folks covered, with the brain power that was involved here, including yourself, the background that is represented here must have just been outstanding.
That was a great group of people, appointed by, the Secretary of Defense, by members of Congress, the Senate and the House, Steve Hadley and Bill Perry co-chairing it, Bill Perry, the first chairman of my board, a former Secretary of Defense, a remarkable man. Who told us at the start that he had two rules, that we were not going to be bipartisan, we were going to be nonpartisan, and second, he said, we're going to get this thing done on time. Mm-hmm. And Bill and Steve Hadley, who's going to be joining us soon, also just a wonderful gentleman, oversaw a really, really talented group of people, an awful lot of my heroes, Rich Armitage, former Deputy Secretary of State, who's on my board, Generals George Julwin, Jack Keane, Larry Welch, a remarkable group of people who have devoted extraordinary portions of their career to the service of the nation in uniform in the executive branch, who came together to try to help the Department of Defense deal with some transitions that it's going to have to make at this time of great strategic change in the world.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the genesis of this panel. Talk about how it got started. Talk about the charge that you were given when it began and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So the independent panel is intended to review the Quadrennial Defense Review in every 4 years session, self-reflection, analysis that the Department of Defense goes through. This is the second Quadrennial Defense Review I've been involved with. I both participated in an advisory board helping put together this QDR in 2010, worked on the inside on it in 2006 when I was serving in the Pentagon. And the QDR really goes back all the way to the waning days of the Cold War, with the demise of the Soviet Union, a recognition that a military, the best military in the world, had been designed for a different world and could deal with some hard thinking about what it needed to do in a new world order, what changes we could make, what money we could save, but also what directions we needed to go. And so the Quadrennial Defense Review is the Pentagon's internal look. And the Congress decided that in addition to the Pentagon's look, it wanted to have an outside panel of experts take a look at the Quadrennial Defense Review, at the process by which it was developed, at the recommendations it provided. And very importantly, I think, the Quadrennial Defense Review is resource constrained. That is, the Secretary of Defense has to say what he's going to do with roughly the resources available. The QDR independent panel, specifically tasked by Congress to do a resource unconstrained look at the national security problems of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And with no resource constraints, what would you buy? How would you invest in the Department of Defense's capabilities mm-hmm. for the future?
How did that difference of approach on the available resources, do you think, I don't want to use the word color because that might have a negative connotation, but how did that alter the way that you looked at the recommendations that you were going to make?
It was a great advantage, obviously. So strategy is the process of trying to accomplish your ends with the means available. If the means essentially have no limits, strategy gets pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Defense Department didn't have that luxury, and we did. And that, I think, really affected, in particular, one conclusion we came up with, a surprising conclusion probably to a lot of people. So both of the 2006 QDR, which I worked on inside the Pentagon, the 2010 QDR, which I served on an advisory board for, both focused on transforming the Department of Defense for a world of irregular threats, for a world of situations like Iraq, Afghanistan, the war against al-Qaeda. The analysis in both in 2006 and 2010 was that we had a Department of Defense that was well-suited to conventional wars, to conventional threats, not as well-suited to irregular conflicts. And I think both of those QDRs are correct in that analysis, that the department needs to shift that direction. But if we had infinite resources, the QDR independent panel decided, in addition to that move toward irregular warfare, which we applaud, we underline, we agree with, very much a quadrennial defense review of a Pentagon at war, we would also spend a whole lot more money on ships in order to increase America's force posture in the Pacific because of the rising power of Asia, the increasing importance of Asia in the world, and therefore a greater need for U.S. conventional power projection capability in Asia. And that's the really hard trade-off that the Department of Defense had to make that we, the independent panel, had the luxury of not having to think about.
Yeah, that's that observation's especially timely as we see what's going on now with the Koreas, as they're each of them making machinations toward the other.
China actually has been very much in the news over the course of the past year. It's been fascinating. I serve on the Defense Policy Board for Secretary Gates, group of another group of great minds, of which I am the junior member, Henry Kissinger, among others. Getting to talk with Henry Kissinger about China, what is China doing, which direction is China going. Secretary Gates has in the last year twice asked the Defense Policy Board to look at China. And what we've discovered, a big change from 2 years ago when we last looked at it to just last week when we looked at it again, China is becoming much more aggressive in its foreign policy, and it's odd. It's a little bit at odds with itself. China had focused for the last decade really on a bit of a charm offensive throughout Southeast Asia, and it is with some aggressive actions it's taken in the South China Sea with regard to Japanese fishing boats. China has really squandered a lot of that goodwill, and it has underlined the importance of the QDRIP's recommendation of roughly another 40 or 50 ships added to the U.S. Navy in order to increase our ability to keep good order and discipline in the Pacific, keep trade flowing through that increasingly important part of the world.
I didn't intend to bring you in for a foreign policy discussion, but it's fascinating material. What do you think is driving that change in China's attitude when it comes to foreign policy?
Well, China is obviously a rising great power, and rising great powers through history have struggled with that adaptation. The process often results in war, quite frankly. Certainly when the United States was becoming a great power at the end of the 19th century, it engaged in a number of wars around the world. Germany, as it rose to great power, arguably the story of the 20th century is the story of the struggle to deal with the rising power of Germany. Two world wars, and then Germany split for 40 years, split in two because it was just too big for Europe, too powerful. What we're trying to do, we the United States are trying to do, is as China rises, China becomes a great power, it became the second largest economy in the world over the course of 2010, a much faster rise than Western analysts had been expecting, and frankly, than the Chinese themselves had been expecting. We are working hard to make sure that this rise is peaceful, unlike most states that have risen to great power over the past several centuries. China is feeling its oats a little bit. It has recognized that the United States, powerful as we are, we have feet of clay a little bit. The global economic crisis, which was accelerated and some would argue, in fact, caused by the United States by fiscal mismanagement here, has allowed China to really steal a march on us. And one of the most interesting pieces of testimony we overheard last week in the Defense Policy Board was secondhand. One of our members was speaking with a Chinese diplomat who said that in his eyes, China is now 20 years ahead of where it expected to be in terms of relative power balance with the United States, ahead of where it expected to be. It's stolen a big march on us, and it is now trying to understand how to use its newfound power and accomplish what it wants to accomplish in the international system as a great power.
And they view that 20-year rise, my understanding, is more due to our decline than the acceleration of their power ahead of their own schedule. Is that correct?
They've seen some of both. Certainly, they did not expect our economy to stumble as badly as it has in the last 2 years. And important to note that when the U.S. went fully into recession, went into economic decline, gross national product decreasing rather than increasing for about 18 months, China's growth did dip a little bit, but it dipped from double digits down to high single digits. It's still running, even in the worst of the downturn, it was running about 9% economic growth year on year. And it's back in the double digits now. So China accelerating rapidly, the U.S. Slowing down, and there are a lot of problems that the U.S., I think, has to get a hold of, in particular the national debt and the deficit, in order to restore American competitiveness and ensure that we stay out in front of China over the next couple of decades.
My guest is Dr. John Nagle. He's president of the Center for a New American Security. And although you've been self-deprecating so far, you've earned all of the accolades that you have accumulated, and I encourage people to go to federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon and read your bio. I'm not going to embarrass you by going through it here, but Dr. Nagle, very distinguished servant of the United States, and we'll continue our conversation about the Quadrennial Defense Review Independent Panel and lots more issues when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
Hi, Tom and Amy here from the Federal Drive. In this holiday season, it's good to remember the less fortunate people in our community. But you can do more than remember.
You can make a contribution to the Salvation Army. Each year, the Salvation Army raises thousands of dollars for local charity organizations.
Amy and I will be ringing the bell for the Salvation Army this week.
You'll encounter Salvation Army bell ringers at shopping sites throughout the D.C. metro area.
And from both of us,
Happy Holidays!
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
What will happen to your hard-earned wealth after you die? How do you protect your assets for your family? Will your heirs squander it away? Will creditors and predators try to take it away from your loved ones? At Zelle Law, our goal is to give you peace of mind in planning for your retirement and beyond by helping you construct the best life and estate plans customized to your needs. Find out what you need to know on Blueprint for Wealth. Join me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
Billman Company in Gaithersburg says open your hearts to the many children who may not have a Christmas this year. Drop off a gift to one of the designated Toys for Tots drop-off points around town and make the season brighter for all children. This message is from Billman Company, your HVAC professionals at 7411 Lindbergh Drive in Gaithersburg, where they feel that it's a privilege to serve the community and it's a bigger privilege to serve you. For information, dial 301-948-9040. The HVAC professionals at Billman Company are wishing everyone a happy holiday season.
Good news for the uninsured and the insured. U.S. Healthy People 2020 Network is now offering annual health physical to the public. Members receive comprehensive health assessments for hypertension, thyroid, kidney, osteoporosis, diabetes, cholesterol, heart screening, and more till the year 2020. Find out your risks for heart attack or stroke. Take the extra step you and your family need to stay healthy till 2020 and beyond. Call 301-386-2223 or visit ushealthypeople2020.org for details. Sponsored by Prevent First, a nonprofit health organization.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. Don't ask, don't tell. It's ending. DOD facing a big change management issue. We're going to talk to the Palm Center about how DOD makes this change efficiently and effectively. And we'll continue looking at the big stories of 2010. We'll talk to former EPA CIO Molly O'Neill about IT in the past year and a look back with senior correspondent Mike Causey this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. John Nagle is the president of the Center for a New American Security and my guest for both hours of Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And later on in hour number two of the program, we'll be joined by your colleague from the Quadrennial Defense Review Independent Panel, Honorable...
Steve Hadley.
I'm looking down the list here, and the reason that his name it's escaped me is because he's one of the co-chairs. He's up here at the top.
He gets a separate line with Bill Perry.
That's right. He and Secretary Perry got their own lines. This conversation, or the desire to have this conversation, originally sprang out of testimony that Mr. Hadley and Bill Perry gave to the House Armed Services Committee, and they also testified in the Senate, but I ran the highlights of the House Armed Services Committee hearing, and you've been before these committees and
I have. I was sitting behind Steve and Bill, actually, when they testified.
One of the shortcomings of radio, of course, is that I couldn't see you because I was listening to the audio, so I didn't have that advantage. But there are 20 members of this panel, and as we read this report that's posted at federalnewsradio.com, I'm reminded of the Deficit Commission and the members who voted recently on that. There had to be a certain number. What was the mechanical logistics of this as far as the names that are attached to this, signing on to and buying into everything that's in it?
So I mentioned earlier Bill Perry's rules. Bill Perry said that we had to be not just bipartisan but nonpartisan. We had to finish on time. Bill also said we had to be unanimous.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got a person of the stature of Bill Perry chairing this meeting, chairing these repeated meetings over about a six-month period with smaller subgroups breaking off for some sessions, but with that sort of attitude from the start that Bill thought very strongly that this group, impressive as the credentials of many people on the group, one exception, are, that the impact of the report would be magnified dramatically if we had a unanimous decision. And so Bill would occasionally have to raise his eyebrows at somebody. That was about as stern as he got, but a man of immense authority, I think one of the best secretaries of defense we've ever had, and a true gentleman.
You're selling yourself short again with that crack about the credentials, and you're going to make me read this bio of yours if you keep up with that.
That would be the worst 5 minutes in radio history.
The idea, though, that this was a unanimous product lends a tremendous amount of credibility to this, I think, because as you look at this list, you mentioned Mr. Armitage, you mentioned the generals that are involved with this, so you have a cross-section of people who have served the United States, both parties, uniformed and civilian, executive, legislative branch. The cross sections of all aspects of this are tremendous, and I think a statement about what this includes. Let's dig into some of the content of this when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is John Nagle. He's president of the Center for a New American Security. My guest on Pentagon Solutions every first and third Tuesday of the month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
I'm Stephanie Shelton, CNBC Radio. Stocks are up as Canada's Toronto Dominion Bank buys Chrysler Financial, the automaker's old lending arm, for more than $6 billion. Right now, the Dow is up 52 and the Nasdaq's up 16. The New York Attorney General is suing the big accounting firm Ernst & Young, charging that it helped Lehman Brothers deceive investors by concealing some fraudulent transactions. Lehman went under 2 years ago, setting off the financial panic. The Federal Trade Commission has approved Intel's plan to acquire McAfee, the antivirus software company, but the European Union still has to sign off on the deal. If you're driving home for Christmas or that ski vacation, be prepared to pay more for gas. Gasoline futures are rising today after a problem at a Caribbean refinery, which is expected to keep supplies in the Northeast tight through the holidays. Activision says its hit video game Call of Duty Black Ops has crossed the $1 billion mark in worldwide sales, and that's a record for the company. Stephanie Shelton, CNBC Radio.
Blurriness, wavy lines, blind spot, these are all symptoms of a chronic condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, also known as wet AMD. It can develop quickly, and it's a leading cause of blindness in people 60 and older. Learn about your risk factors and find out how a retina specialist can help. Just visit amdawareness.org. And if you aren't seeing clearly, get checked now. Knowing the symptoms may save your sight. Learn more at amdawareness.org today. This message was brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech.
Why do we rely on just investing when there's another way? A way to measure success over a lifetime, not just a single day. Where you don't chase what's hot, you do what's right. And where there's one rule, the golden rule. We call it vanguarding. Vanguarding is a behavior, a philosophy, a call to action. So ask yourself, are you just investing or are you vanguarding? Learn more at vanguard.com or call us at 888-VANGUARD.
Courage. The true meaning of the word is often forgotten. The Washington Capitals want to remind everyone what true courage is. Through Courage Caps, the Capitals will raise funds to help the truly courageous men and women who defend our country and their families. The Capitals are selling Courage Caps and T-shirts, with all proceeds benefiting our military kids, an organization that's dedicated to supporting National Guard and military reserve families, one child at a time. Join the Capitals and show your courage by purchasing a Courage Cap at WashingtonCaps.com today.
Attention! If you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity. In a 6-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now, Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you are eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-400-7910 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue your current eating habits. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-400-7910. That's 1-800-400-7910. 1-800-400-7910.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We are sent to tell.
Hi, Tom and Amy here from the Federal Drive. In this holiday season, it's good to remember the less fortunate people in our community. But you can do more than remember.
You can make a contribution to the Salvation Army. Each year, the Salvation Army raises thousands of dollars for local charity organizations.
Amy and I will be ringing the bell for the Salvation Army this week.
You'll encounter Salvation Army bell ringers at shopping sites throughout the D.C. metro area.
And from both of us,
Happy Holidays!
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. John Nagle, the president of the Center for New American Security, is my guest on Pentagon Solutions today, and he is a member of the Quadrennial Defense Review Independent Panel that came out with a report called The QDR in Perspective, Meeting America's National Security Needs in the 21st Century. This report, as we've been talking about, was done after meetings with 20 of some of the biggest minds in the world of national security. Talk about what is included in this report that might surprise people coming from a group of very distinguished people such as that you were involved with.
I've already mentioned probably the heavy metal takeaway is that the QDR independent panel recommended a pretty dramatic increase in the number of Navy ships, up to 346, as I recall. Not necessarily what would have been expected from a group that included a number of people who focus on counterinsurgency, on irregular warfare, very conventional sort of response to what the panel saw pretty unanimously as a rising area of concern, Chinese power in the Pacific. And we thought that the Navy was the best way to answer that. We had the advantage of being resource unconstrained. The Department of Defense had to had to make harder choices than we did, and it focused correctly, I think, in a resource-constrained world on adapting for irregular warfare. The other big surprise, probably, given the group of defense policy experts who comprised the panel, was that we spent an awful lot of time thinking about civilian capacity and the role of civilians on the modern battlefield in preventing wars, in recovering from wars, in building peace and stability. In fact, we took that so seriously that the second chapter of our report is called The Comprehensive Approach, and it recommends pretty dramatic changes in the State Department, the Agency for International Development, all the way through the Department of Agriculture, the Department of the Treasury, a number of the civilian agencies of U.S. government, which the panel believed have a much larger role to play in the kind of wars we're fighting today, whose contributions are invaluable, but who don't have the resources right now, the culture, the training, the doctrine, to be as effective in the roles that we need them to play as we'd like to see them have. So that's probably the other big surprise from this group, is that a group of defense policy experts said, hey, Pentagon's, broadly speaking, moving in the right direction. Let's get the rest of the government moving that way, too.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is interesting about this report, is that it dovetails, I think, with what Secretary Gates and Secretary Clinton have talked about when it comes to soft power. There has been a long discussion predating the current administration, predating the Bush administration, and back further than that, about the appropriate role of civilians in warfighting zones. And there's just so many variables. It's a very fluid dynamic, I think. What was your takeaway from that part of the discussion, even above and beyond what's in the report?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been, I think, enormously fortunate to have had Secretary Gates, who stepped in when he did, with 2 years left in the Bush administration. And at that point, his focus was, as he told, I believe, a Senate panel, Iraq, Iraq, and Iraq. Mm-hmm. And Iraq has, broadly speaking, turned around. Still concerns there, but they're pretty clearly moving in the right direction, so that he has been able to turn his attention most recently to Afghanistan. But Secretary Gates also has been a strong advocate throughout his tenure. I think one of the best choices the Obama administration made was keeping him on. But so through two administrations, Secretary Gates has said, hey, I'm changing the Department of Defense. I'm making it more capable for irregular warfare. But the Department of Defense needs some partners to do this. It needs some civilian experts who understand economic development, who understand tribal negotiations and tribal dynamics. And so the most effective spokesman for a bigger and a different State Department, I think, ironically, has been the Secretary of Defense. And we've seen just literally in the last week, Secretary Clinton has responded, I think, admirably, with the release of the first ever Quadrennial Diplomacy and Development Review, the QDDR. And this, I think, was a very smart response by the State Department, which recognized that the Pentagon makes big money every 4 years by doing a soup-to-nuts look at its programs, at what it does, and evaluates whether it is effective as it should be, as it needs to be, given the changes in the world. And Secretary Clinton said, I'm going to do the same thing. And that report just released, done largely under the leadership of Anne-Marie Slaughter, the Director for Policy Plans at State, echoes and reinforces and broadly supports what Secretary Gates has been saying, what we said in the QDR independent panel report, that we need more resources for the civilian agencies of government. We need more training for those folks to operate in hostile circumstances, in situations of extreme pressure, and be an effective arm of the U.S. government in helping respond to the kind of security challenges we're facing in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I like to say that the Army has needed to become more like the State Department over the last decade, and mm-hmm. it's done that, broadly speaking.
Yes.
Now State is becoming a little bit more like the Army, mm-hmm. and increasing the number of people who it's going to deploy to combat zones, work in those kind of situations, and do the essential diplomacy and development work that with defense are key to maintaining and ensuring U.S. national security in this century.
I think that metaphor is very apt, but I imagine it might cause a little heartburn in the diplomatic corps, because for the last, 250 years of the United States, the idea has been we're completely separate, we do business a completely different way, and understanding some of the culture of diplomacy and adding that into the culture of the military, I would think, would be a lot easier than vice versa.
I think that's absolutely a fair point. And as you look historically at how warfare evolved, that culture difference makes sense, because it used to be that we'd start a war, we'd have the diplomats try to avert a war. They mm-hmm. try, they failed. War started. Diplomacy would stop. We'd fight the war, and then diplomacy would start again when the war ended, and the diplomats wouldn't be on the ground in hostile situations. But the kind of wars we're fighting now, what British General Rupert Smith calls wars among the peoples, irregular wars, wars where the insurgents are fish swimming among the sea of the people, to use Mao's phrase, in those kind of wars, diplomacy continues throughout the fighting, and negotiation is an essential part of concluding the war on favorable terms. So we need different capabilities, both in our armed forces and at State. And while I'll agree that State may not like the idea of becoming more like the Army, and I'm sure they wouldn't phrase it that way, we do have an awful lot of diplomats who've gotten really, really comfortable, as comfortable as you can get, in their body armor mm-hmm. and in their Kevlars.
Yeah.
And they understand what this kind of warfare means. And we've got an awful lot of folks in the Army and in the Marines who also may not like the idea of being compared to diplomats, right? I joined the military to kill people and break things is the common attitude.
Yeah.
But the truth is that they've gotten really good at drinking cups of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And the wars we're fighting now are won by shooting the right people, absolutely. But the hard part is figuring out who the right people are.
Mm-hmm.
And to find that out, an awful lot of times, you've got to drink a lot of tea to win these kind of wars, to build the trust so that people will tell you who the bad people are.
There is an ongoing conversation, a debate, and the side that you're on, I think you've tipped your cards a little bit, but we'll talk about it some more when we come back from the break. There are some folks who say that State Department, USAID, should be the only federal agencies, civilian agencies, that respond in these kinds of situations, and if there is expertise in Treasury and Agriculture and some of the other agencies, as you cited, that expertise should maybe be on loan but channeled through those two departments. Let's talk about that conversation, part of the conversation, when we come back from the break. John Noggle's my guest. He is the president of the Center for New American Security, and we'll also talk a little counterinsurgency when we come back, an area about which you have a tremendous amount of expertise. It's In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Hey, Lisa, how's it going?
Good, thanks. Just getting ready for the holidays.
Same here. You headed out of town?
Yeah.
Let me ask you, do you worry about the house?
No, not since we got home monitoring from Ackerman Security Systems.
Ackerman?
That's right. Not only is it one of the largest security companies in the country with more than 40 years' experience, but get this, when you switch to Ackerman, you pay just $18.95 a month.
$18.95. What's the catch?
No catch. There's also no cost to switch, and you can use your existing equipment. With Ackerman, we know the house is safe, even if the neighborhood is cleared out for the holidays.
Whether you want a new system with the latest technology or you want to switch to reliable monitoring for just $18.95 a month, call 1-888-999-1070. That's 1-888-999-1070. Or visit AckermanSecurity.com. Join the more than 180,000 people who enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. And as an added bonus for federal employees, when you make the switch, the first 4 months of your home monitoring service are free.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider.
Manish Chopra is the Obama administration's chief technology officer.
The ecosystem that's been born out of the open health data movement, I believe, is one of the shining lights.
Of course, it's great having somebody like Todd Park over there.
We've got chief technologies officers at the VA under Peter Levin and Jim Shelton, who runs innovation over at the Department of Education. All have demonstrated results in fostering these ecosystems to not only publish the data, but to do something meaningful with it.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/DorabeckInsider. Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the Go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. My guest is John Nagle of the Center for a New American Security. He's a member of the Quadrennial Defense Review Independent Panel that produced the QDR in Perspective, Meeting America's National Security Needs in the 21st Century. It'll be linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And our conversation, both this hour and next hour when Stephen Hadley will join us, will also be archived there later today as well. We were talking before the break about the discussion in this independent panel report about the necessity for the State Department, for USAID, and for other civilian agencies to become maybe more attuned to the manner in which the Pentagon goes about its business to help them be more effective in some of these situations that they're finding themselves in, Iraq and Afghanistan today, and potentially other places around the globe in the future. There's a conversation around town that any efforts that we make in the soft power realm should be focused through state and USAID, all of the resources and expertise and knowledge and so on funneled through those two agencies, rather than having a State Department presence, a USAID presence, a Treasury Department presence, Agriculture Department presence, maybe even a HUD presence with when housing needs are manifest themselves. What are your thoughts about that, and what did you see when you were in Iraq as far as the multi-agency response?
What I saw in Iraq was really one of the things that drove me toward a real desire, both on the QDR independent panel, in my own writing and thinking, for greater civilian capacity. I served in El Anbar province in the Wild West of Iraq in 2003-2004 as the insurgency was really catching fire, and we struggled with insufficient civilian capacity to engage in negotiations with the Sunni tribes against whom we were fighting, insufficient economic development expertise to know where to invest the tens of thousands of dollars I had to invest every month in trying to build local civilian capacity. I didn't know whether I literally struggled with the question, do I spend $50,000 to build a health clinic, to build a school, to improve the roads, to create microloans to try to get business started? And I didn't know what the best return on investment was, given the particular dynamics of the town I was working in, the region, the history of that region. And so we were left as Army officers, as soldiers, to try to figure all that out on our own. State simply didn't have the capacity, the number of Foreign Service officers to send one to every battalion or even every brigade in the Army. We've come a long way since then. The State Department has drastically increased its hiring. In the 1990s, there were years when we literally didn't hire any Foreign Service officers. And I'm going to go deeper into this just for a minute, because I think this is a great example of a mistake the U.S. government is making. We've got literally tens of thousands of great committed young Americans every year who take the Foreign Service exam, who want to serve their country as Foreign Service officers, and we are simply not taking advantage of that talent as a nation. We've been hiring far too few of them at a time when we have unmet needs around the globe. The Foreign Service simply not big enough to fill all of the desks it has to fill in all of the embassies around the globe, and also provide the forward officers, Foreign Service officers, necessary to help battalions and brigades make smart political choices. Because on the ground in El Anbar province, in the provinces of southern and eastern Afghanistan right now, military officers are making decisions that have large political consequences. New York Times has a great piece about this actually today, about how tough it is to be a young army officer in southern Afghanistan. And we're not providing them, I don't think, as a nation, with all of the resources that they need to be as effective as they should be. And we've got great young Americans. It's not as if we have to convince more great young Americans to apply to join the Foreign Service. They're doing it now, and it's not an easy test. We have not decided as a nation to devote the resources to the State Department, to the civilian elements of government that we need to prevent future wars, which is a whole lot cheaper than fighting them. And when we do fight them, to fight them as effectively as we can, to make sure that they're as short as they can be and we hurt as few people as we possibly can. So this is a case where a smarter investment, I think, of admittedly American tax dollars at a time when there's an awful lot of pressure to decrease the national debt. But I think that an investment in more Foreign Service officers, more USAID officers, would be a really smart national decision. This is one of the reasons why I applaud the Quadrennial Diplomacy and Development Review that Secretary Clinton released just last week. I think it serves as a pretty strong clarion call to Capitol Hill to fund more, to provide more funding for Foreign Service officers, to increase the size of the State Department. And I think if we do that the right way, we may avoid some wars in the future, and the return on investment will be very, very high indeed.
At some point in time, I would like to have you come back and engage in a conversation that unfortunately we don't have time for today, and that is, from your perspective as an officer in a war zone, what would make a good Foreign Service officer? What attributes does he or she have? What skills, background, experience, and so on to be useful for the purposes that we're talking about? Would love to have you come back after the first of the year and talk about that, because I think that's an area that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. And there are many people who agree with you that that's a critical component of moving forward for us.
That'd be a fun discussion. I'd love to do that in conjunction with, either one of my buddies who's done this for the State Department, for USAID, in order to bring both of those perspectives to bear. I think that you'd see an awful lot of overlap in the skill set that you need. In both cases, you've got to be cheerful. You've got to be able to endure privations. You've got to have some basic competency with getting out of the way of incoming artillery rounds and bullets. But the Army officer should have more skill with sending bullets going out the other way, and the diplomat more experience with unemployed dollars, diplomacy, information to accomplish the objectives of U.S. national security policy.
My guest is John Noggle of the Center for a New American Security. When we come back, we'll talk counterinsurgency, as I promised we would get into here on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's Pentagon Solutions, a two-hour version of the program today as we explore the Quadrennial Defense Review Independent Panel's final report. You can find more about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. We'll be right back.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance? And how are federal agencies becoming more transparent and open? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Tune into the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.
Looking for a quick stocking stuffer, a great gift idea for the Ravens fan in your life? Pick up a 17-month cheerleader swimsuit calendar for only $15. This calendar features 40 stunning Ravens cheerleaders on the beautiful beaches of the Bahamas. Get one today at BaltimoreRavensStore.com or on game day from the cheerleaders. Don't delay. Get yours now.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
With the announcement from the Office of Management and Budget on cloud computing as the default approach to IT, the Cloud First policy is expected to reduce the federal government's more than 2,000 data centers by 40%. Join Afcea Bethesda and Dave McClure from GSA for a panel discussion on the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative and the expanded use of cloud computing with federal IT officers from Energy, State, Interior, and NIST at the Bethesda North Marriott on January 13th. To register today, visit afceabethesda.org/janbreakfast.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. John Noggle of the Center for New American Security is my guest. And one of the credentials that you bring is the work that you did on the U.S. Army Marine Corps Counterinsurgency Field Manual. I think anybody that's paid any attention to these issues since the time that the United States has been involved in Iraq understands the situation that we were in when we went there and the situation that we're in today, as it appears at least, that our involvement on a combat basis is winding down and is not nearly as intense as it was. What tools did we lack when that situation started? Was it capacity, number of warfighters? Was it the weaponry and equipment? Was it the strategy, or was it all of those things or others?
Mm-hmm. So to understand the situation the United States was in when the war in Iraq started in 2003, you really have to go back to Vietnam, I'm afraid. And the United States learned how to conduct counterinsurgency really pretty effectively through the course of the Vietnam War after a slow start. Under Creighton Abrams, in particular, who took command after General Westmoreland became chief of staff of the Army, the U.S. Army became pretty effective in counterinsurgency late in the Vietnam War. But it didn't matter. The American people had lost patience with faith with the effort, and we were defeated there at great expense. And in the wake of that experience, the Army really decided pretty unilaterally that it wasn't going to conduct that kind of war anymore. It wasn't going to do counterinsurgency anymore. So it literally, in a lot of cases, burned the records.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, when an insurgency erupted in Iraq in late 2003, and I was in Al Anbar as it was picking up steam, we didn't have current counterinsurgency doctrine. It was literally 20, 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't been trained in it. We didn't understand the concept as an army, and this led Secretary of Defense Gates to later call the Army out and say the Army was unprepared for the kind of wars it actually had to fight. And Gates, one of the leaders in helping the Army become more effective in it. But what you saw, I think, was a learning process over the course of the war in Iraq, in which an Army initially unprepared for that kind of war developed some of the diplomatic skills we've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
Began to understand that it needed to restrain its use of firepower, build alliances with local sheikhs, understand the politics, the economics of the societies that it was working with, and protect the population. And that learning process enabled a much more successful outcome than many of us who served in Iraq ever expected, frankly.
And I apologize tremendously for giving this topic short shrift, but we've got to go to break and then bring in your colleague from the panel, Stephen Hadley, former National Security Advisor. It's In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This hour you've been hearing Dr. John Nagel of the Center for a New American Security. He'll stay here for hour number two, and we'll be joined by Stephen Hadley in just a few moments on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.